Thank you for standing by, and welcome to the Bashneft fourth quarter IFRS financial results conference call. I must advise you that this conference is being recorded today, Thursday the 26th of March 2015. Certain statements in this presentation may contain assumptions or forecasts with respect to forthcoming events within Bashneft. The words expect, estimate, intend, will, could, negations thereof, and similar expressions identify forward-looking statements. We wish to caution you that these statements are only predictions and that the actual events or results may differ materially. We do not intend to update these statements to reflect events and circumstances occurring after the above-mentioned date or to reflect the occurrence of unanticipated events. Many factors could cause the actual results of Bashneft Group to differ materially from those contained in our projections or forward-looking statements, including, among others, general economic conditions, our competitive environment, risks associated with operating in Russia, rapid technological and market changes in our industries, as well as many other risks specifically related to Bashneft Group. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. There will be a presentation followed by a question and answer session, at which time, if you wish to ask a question, you will need to press star 1 on your telephone. Your speakers today will be Bashneft CEO Alexander Korsik, Vice President for Finance and Economics Denis Stankovic, and Head of IR Maria Radina. I would now like to hand the conference over to your first speaker today, Mr. Alexander Korsik. Please go ahead.
Ladies and gentlemen, good afternoon. It's a great pleasure to talk to you again. This is the first time I'm talking to you in my new capacity, the capacity of the CEO of the company, which is controlled by the state. But as to me, nothing has changed. My mentality hasn't changed. My approach to running the company hasn't changed. And I do not identify any signals that shareholders, new shareholders, would like to implement any radical changes to what the company was doing before. I believe you have the same opinion. Otherwise, the value of the company wouldn't have increased by approximately 40% since the beginning of the year. To my mind, it's your trust that the company would continue to be an efficient company, as I hope you believe it was before, and would continue to do everything in line with the interests of all shareholders. Some key points about our results. And we'll be talking not only about fourth quarter, but about the whole year, 2014. Production. We increased production of crude in 2014 by 9.8%. If we take average daily production, it increased by 12.4%. We produced 828,000 tons of crude in Trebs and Titov, 665 in Burnyaftigaz, and 16.3 million tons in our brown fields. Trebs and Titov and Burnyaftigaz are, of course, important, but the most important thing is that we managed again to increase our production in brown fields. I'll just to remind you of our old tradition. For a number of years, we were promising that we'll keep the production in brown fields at the flat level, and every year there is a slight increase. I hope very much that we will be able to continue and to maintain this tradition. Refining. We refined 21.66 million tons of crude in 2014. It's a slight increase in comparison to 2013, 1.2%. But I would like to stress that the number itself doesn't matter much. The volume of oil refined in our refineries is always a function of current economic situation, and one should look not at how much we have refined, one should look at how much money we have produced through the refining. We produced 82.6% of gasoline Euro 5. We can produce 100% Euro 5. Now, after all our modernization program aimed at producing Euro 5 products has been finalized, But we are producing less because it doesn't make economic sense to produce 100% of Euro 5 due to the fact that sometimes it's more cost efficient to produce, for example, Euro 3 and to export it to Central Asia. In 2014, we put into production two major units in our refineries. It's hydrotreatment of gasoline and the largest hydrogen unit in Russia. And again, we have finished our modernization program aimed at fulfilling governmental regulations in terms of production Euro 5 diesel and gasoline. We made some major acquisitions in 2014. One of them was Burneftgaz. I can say it's a very good acquisition, and our experience working in the fields of Burneftgaz show that our assumptions were absolutely right, exactly like we expected them to be. Again, we managed to increase our reserves. In accordance with the audit done by independent auditor Miller & Lenz, proved reserves increased in 2014 by 4.9% and reached 2,145 million barrels of oil. Reserves recovery rate in 2014 was 179%. We continued acquisition of retail stations, and 2014 was quite successful in this respect. We managed to buy 109 new retail stations and 11 land plots with a very good location. The last but not the least, we finished in the first part of last year organization of the company called Sistema Invest, and in this way we eliminated cross-holding in the company and managed to create the structure which is quite simple and fully transparent to the shareholder. Just now we finalized this process by cancellation of 141% of shares, which were treasury shares. In 2014, we returned control over of our Xintas through United Petrochemical Company. Sistema returned this asset to ourselves, and again, it was a very good, I can't say acquisition, it was a very good return. It's very good because the company constitutes a very healthy business in current economic environment. As you know, we have a new board of directors. You can have a look at the list of the directors on this board, and I believe you would share my opinion that all the people on the board are highly professional, and it enables me to say that the company would continue to work as it was working before in the interest of all shareholders. I stress all shareholders, not only the government. And as to me, for the time being, I haven't seen any signs that new board members are expecting any significant changes in the direction of development of the company. I believe you are interested what's going to happen to the strategy. We started to discuss the strategy with the new board. Right now, those are preliminary discussions. Key elements of the strategy will be discussed at the forthcoming board of directors on the 31st of March, but I stress it will be just a preliminary hearing. The strategy will be ready by autumn, and again, I do not see any desire from any board members to make any radical changes to this strategy. Dividends, the issue which is probably one of the most important to all the shareholders. We are all aware that we are in a new macroeconomic situation. I'm pretty sure that you know we cannot afford to pay the same amount of dividends which we were paying before, but there is but. We have a formal policy which is being applied to all companies which are state-controlled, which stipulates that we should pay not less than 25% of net profit. But in reality, and I believe it's my feeling is it's a joint understanding of all board members, that the company would like to pay as much as possible to the shareholders without sacrificing long-term growth and without having any negative impact on the financial stability. If those two preconditions are fulfilled, I believe dividends should be healthy in forthcoming years as usual. Of course, the amount of dividends which should be paid to the shareholders is a decision of the shareholders, but nevertheless, I can say that in 2015, the company can afford, taking into account two things I have mentioned, not to sacrifice long-term growth and not to inflict any damage on financial stability, the company is capable of paying about 20 billion rubles of dividends. Some indicators for 2015. I'll start with our production. Again, the same approach as before. Brownfields will produce as much as it was produced in 2014. But I would like to add a couple of words. Those couple of words would be at least. Treps and Titov will produce 1.2, approximately. Burneftegaz, approximately 1.4. Altogether, it will be 19. You can add up three numbers. You will not get to the number 19, but please keep in mind that 19 looks more than probable. Refining. In accordance with our plan, we are going to refine 19.5 million tons this year. It's lower than the volume we have refined in last year. We came to this number through the modeling on a very complicated optimization system, which we introduced in the company in full scope system, which we introduced in the company last year, taking into account our assumptions about oil prices, product prices, exchange rates, etc., etc. 19.5 looks like a number which will bring the best economic benefit to the company. We'll produce more light products this year. If production of light products last year was about 62%, plan for this year is more than 65%. We can do it due to the fact that we put into operation two units I've mentioned before. For your knowledge, as to now, since the beginning of the year, the production of light products was 67%. Those are major events of 2014. Some ideas about what we are going to do in 2015. Again, I have very strong reasons to believe that nothing will change in the behavior of the company. It will continue to look for the interests of all shareholders. It will do its best to pay as much possible in terms of dividends, and it will continue to do its best in order to increase long-term value of the company. And now, if you don't mind, I will pass the word to our CFO, Denis Stankevich, and later on I'll be happy to answer your questions. Thank you very much.
Добрый день, дамы и господа. Несколько слов о результатах четвертого квартала и прошлого. Начну с макроэкономики. Вы все прекрасно помните, что именно четвертый квартал прошлого года характеризовался существенным снижением цен на нефть и существенной девальвацией рубля. Все это оказало влияние на наши результаты, которые пока представлены в публикуемой сегодня отчетности. В первую очередь, мы это влияние оцениваем как отрицательное. Снижение цен на нефть составило практически 25%. И главное отрицательное влияние, почему оно оказалось таковым, это связано с более высокими таможенными пошлинами, которые снизились не так быстро, снижались не так быстро, как сама цена. Эти тенденции, разумеется, были релевантны не только для нас, но и для всей отрасли. Все компании, которые раскрывали свои результаты перед нами, показали аналогичную динамику. И вы можете сами отметить, что затраты на пошлины были существенно выше относительно цены нефтепродукты, чем в более ранние месяцы, в первые три квартала этого года. Также из важных показателей тех результатов, которые мы сегодня публикуем, вы могли заметить рост транспортных затрат. Связано это было с тем, что в первую очередь Александр упоминал присоединение ООСа, то есть нефтехимия также попала уже в раскрываемые нами результаты и повлияла на рост данных затрат. Ну и также на четвертый квартал характеризуется отсутствием навигации, соответственно, ростом тарифов на реализацию таких продуктов, как мазут и вакуумный газоль, который мы в четвертом квартале продаем через, транспортируем через железнодорожный транспорт. Еще два важных момента – это обесценение основных средств и обесценение финансовых активов, достаточно значительные суммы, которые вы также обращают на себя внимание. То, что касается активов, мы, как мы считаем, совершенно справедливо реагируем на ту макроэкономическую ситуацию, которая сложилась, и списываем ряд основных средств. Касается это Тартасинского месторождения «Бурнефтегаза». Относительно финансовых активов, это начисление резервов по ряду исторических финансовых вложений.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I would say a few words about the Q4 and 2014 performance. And I will start with the macroeconomics. You may all remember quite well that it was Q4 last year which was characterized by a material oil price decline as well as the ruble devaluation, all of which you put together produced an effect over our performance results which are currently being presented to you in our disclosed reporting. And in the first place, we define this particular effect as the negative one through the oil price decline, which amounted to almost 25%, and the strongest negative effect as to why it ended up being so is related to a higher level of customs duties, which were going down not as quickly as the oil price itself. So these trends evidently were relevant not only to our company but also to the rest of the industry, and all the companies which have disclosed their performance results before us demonstrated similar dynamics, and you can note it yourselves that the custom duty costs ended up being considerably higher relative to the refined product prices compared to the earlier months during the first three quarters of the period under review. Amongst other important indicators for the results that we're currently disclosing, we are noting the growth in the transportation costs, which can be explained by the fact that in the first place, like Alexander mentioned it, where the petrochemicals are currently being included into our performance results, as well as generating a certain effect over the growing costs. Similarly, during Q4, we were living without navigation, and consequently, the tariffs for selling such products as the fuel oil and vacuum gas oil, which we were selling through, which we were transporting them by railroad, also reflects that. Two other important points is the impairment of fixed costs and financial assets, some significant amounts of which do draw attention to this taking place. As far as the assets are concerned, we do believe it's quite fair in our turn to respond to the macroeconomics around us and consequently writing off a number of assets, and that applies to the Tartasinski field under Burneftegaz. Now, with respect to the financial assets, these are the accrual of reserves pertaining to a number of historic financial investments.
Несколько слов о нашем долге. Как вы видите, за последний квартал он практически не изменился. Общий уровень долга остался на уровне 166 миллиардов рублей. Если говорить о ставке по она немного выросла, связано это с замещением части валютного долга на рублевую составляющую. Естественно, рублевая составляющая более дорогая. Как я говорил уже на прошлом раскрытии, у нас по ковенанте о смене контролирующего акционера была предъявлена досрочная часть синдиката PXF. Это предъявление произошло не только в конце прошлого года, но и частично в начале уже текущего года. Но, как я уже также отмечал, общее предъявление составило довольно незначительную сумму, которая легко была замещена компанией. В целом, то, что касается управления долгами, управления ликвидностью, стоит отметить, что компания придерживается на сегодняшний день политики достаточно высокого уровня ликвидности в виде денег на счетах. Все, что можно не гасить, мы стараемся не гасить и занимаемся размещением денежных средств. И в конце прошлого года, и в начале этого нам удавалось размещать короткие депозиты по ставкам лучше, чем ставки привлечения. В этом смысле компания дополнительных затрат на поддержание ликвидности не несет. Отмечу еще одну позитивную для нас вещь. 24 марта компания Fitch в ходе пересмотра рейтинга подтвердила тот же уровень рейтинга, а именно BB со стабильным прогнозом.
Now a few words about our debt. As you may know, during the past quarter it hasn't almost changed at all. The overall debt level remains at 166 billion rubles. Now, if we are to talk about the rate, it has slightly grown, which can be explained by the substitution of a certain portion of the hard currency debt with the ruble component, which naturally is a bit more expensive. And like I've mentioned during the previous disclosure, in as far as the controlling shareholder covenant change is concerned, a certain PXF in a part of the call took place, which occurred not only in the end of last year but also during this year in the beginning. But like I similarly noted, the general effect amounted to an insignificant amount, which was easily substituted by the company as well. Now, speaking in general, as far as the debt and liquidity management is concerned, one should say that the company is adhering today to the policy of a significantly high level of liquidity in the form of cash on deposits, and whatever cannot be paid we're trying not to pay, trying to place our cash into deposit. And by the end of last year, as well as in the beginning of this year, we were able to place short-term deposit at the rates which were better than the rates that we had to meet when raising this money. So in this way the company is not incurring any additional costs in maintaining its liquidity level. Two additional positive things. On March 24th, Fitch Ratings, during the review of our positions, has confirmed the similar level of rating, which is double B, with a positive outlook.
Также в конце своего выступления, в дополнение к тому, что сказал Александр по 2015 году по прогнозам операционных результатов и дивидендов, хотелось бы дополнить несколькими цифрами по предполагаемым капитальным вложениям. Компания по-прежнему продолжает стратегию большего направления денежных средств и капитальных вложений в блок «Апстрим». Примерно 20 миллиардов мы предполагаем вложить на поддержание добычи на зрелых месторождениях. 19 миллиардов будет вложено в месторождение Трепса и Титова и в районе 6 миллиардов в развитии компании «Мурнефтегаз», находящейся в Чувашской. То, что касается нефтепереработки, мы ожидаем капитальное вложение на уровне 11 миллиардов в течение 2015 года. И на сегодняшний день мы взяли паузу по совершению сделок M&A в ритейле. Это связано также с поддержанием ликвидности. Это не значит, что мы совершенно отказались от этой идеи и развития своей сети, но в текущей ситуации позиция компании именно такова. У меня все. Мы готовы ответить на ваши вопросы.
And in conclusion of my presentation and to augment what Mr. Korsik stated with respect to 2015 in terms of the outlook for operational results and the dividends, I would like to mention a few figures describing the expected capital investment levels. The company continues to pursue the strategy of a greater emphasis in terms of the investments going into the upstream. Approximately 20 billion we expect to invest into maintaining our production from mature fields. 19 billion will be invested into the Treps and Titov field, and about 6 billion into the development of the Bur Neftegaz company, which is located in the Tumen region. Now, and as far as refining is concerned, we expect that our capital investment will be at the level of 11 billion in the course of 2015. And as of today, we have taken some time out in terms of our M&A activities in the retail area, which is similarly related to our efforts to maintain liquidity. But this doesn't mean that we have completely given up on this idea to develop our network, but within the current environment, this is the position that the company has taken. So this is it. I would be happy now to answer your questions.
Thank you. As a reminder, if you wish to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. If you wish to cancel your request, please press the hash key. Your first question comes from the line of Max Moshkov. Please ask your question.
Yes, good evening. Thanks for the ability to ask a question. I have just two questions, actually. First, regarding your brownfields, you said that you will be able to maintain production flat or even grow it slightly in the future. But we observed that you actually did quite a decent job on all these production enhancements and production growing. This basically congrats with that. But what methods of enhancements will you be applying apart from the water flooding and others to keep production flattish? And how do you see this method? Do you think they will be still economically possible for you to apply that potentially more expensive methods to keep production flattish at your brownfields? And the second question regarding dividends. So it's quite impressive your target, which is quite shareholder friendly to pay that high dividends. But would you think that the government may potentially approve the high dividend payout for Bashneft, dividend payout for Bashneft, and how do you see this should be addressed? What steps the management should particularly do to persuade the government to establish the special high dividend payout ratio for Bashneft? I mean, above 25%, which is at the threshold level for the state-owned enterprises in the Russian oil sector. Thank you.
Maxim, Alexander Korsik here. I'll try to answer your question. First of all, I don't want to make a false promise that we're going to increase production in brownfields forever. The promise for this year is to maintain it at least on the same level. What we're doing, on one side, nothing extraordinary, nothing. We're using the same technologies which can be used by any other companies. Everything is very simple. We're doing proper 3D seismic. We're doing high-class interpretation. Sometimes expensive interpretation of the seismic. We are finding sweet spots in existing fields and in existing reservoirs, which are quite old, but nevertheless, there are missed reserves. We are doing proper hydrodynamic modeling. We are creating proper construction of wells. Last year, I mentioned that we have a center of distant monitoring of drilling. Where extra class specialists 24 hours a day are following the drilling of 12 major wells, and it helps a lot, and I can continue indefinitely. Nothing new, nothing which is not being used or can theoretically be used by other companies. It's just the proper implementation of these technologies, and the most important thing is that we have people which can implement these technologies in a proper way. As to economics, brownfields are producing a bulk of money of Bashneft, and everything we are doing in our brownfields is cost efficient and looks to be cost efficient in the foreseeable future. When I'm talking about foreseeable future, it's not 1 year, it's several years at least. As to dividends, the government, as any other shareholder, is interested in getting as much money as possible. So I believe from this respect, the government should support managerial view on the policy in terms of dividends. I believe the government or representatives of the government will look at two things I have mentioned. Long-term growth. We shouldn't pay dividends at the expense of capex, which is necessary for long-term growth. And issue number two, we shouldn't undermine the financial stability of the company. If those two conditions are fulfilled, it's not a problem to pay all the money which is not necessary in the current activities of the company to the shareholders, and I believe it's a proper approach. To my mind, management shouldn't do anything to persuade the government to pay as much money as possible without undermining the future of the company. The government is interested in the same things. They would like to get as much money as possible today, next year, and in forthcoming years. Probably I would add a couple of points. When we were creating business plan for this year, we made two assumptions. Assumption number one, we will not get additional credits at a normal interest rate. And assumption number two, we're not going to beg the government to give us some money for some programs. That's why we, for example, reduced our aspirations in acquisition of retail network. It can be postponed until next year, until better times. Otherwise, the number I have outlined, about 20 billion rubles, is the amount which company can afford to pay, but the government, not the government, the shareholders will decide. Thank you very much.
Две вещи буквально. Дело в том, что общее наше направление работы на месторождениях несколько меняется структурно на выработных месторождениях. Если раньше мы больше применяли именно вторичные методы воздействия, то сейчас вектор смещается в бурение. Связано это с тем, что проведено за вот те годы, когда мы работаем, достаточное количество исследований, и мы можем себе позволить бурить новые скважины с очень хорошими дебитами, и это позволяет нам дополнительно поддерживать добычу. И вторая вещь, касающаяся экономики. Дело в том, что прошедшие в законодательстве изменения под названием налоговый маневр сделали апстрим в нефтяной отрасли еще более выгодным относительно даунстрима, и, конечно, в этом смысле использование бурения новых скважин, использование других методов для повышения добычи стало еще более интересно, и это также позволяет нам поддерживать добычу на том уровне, на котором она находится.
And Denis Stankevich would like also to elaborate on the first part of the question, just a couple of points. The thing is that the overall approach to our fields is that the structure of what we do is slightly changing within the depleted fields, whereas in the past we used more of secondary enhancement solutions. Currently we are making a greater effort into the drilling area. And that means that over the years that we have been operating, we've done a sufficient number of surveys, and so currently we can afford to drill new wells with some very good recoveries, and that is something which specifically helps us to additionally maintain our production levels. The second thing is on the economic side. the recent changes which took place in the legislation and the notion of the tax maneuver turned upstream in the oil industry into a much more effective and profitable operation compared to downstream. And so in this sense, the application of the advanced enhancement methods to improve production became more attractive and more interesting, which in its turn also enables the company to maintain our production levels at the with the figures that you are observing.
Your next question comes to the line of Ildar Kasiev. Please ask your question.
Добрый вечер. У меня два вопроса. Один вот продолжение темы о налоговом маневре. Вы не могли бы вот подсказать, если есть ли у вас какие-то оценки по тому, как изменилась маржа переработки у вас по сравнению с прошлым годом, начиная с февраля-марта месяца, когда ушел эффект запаздывания экспортной пошлины. И второй вопрос у меня, он касательно метода оценки запасов в ФРС. Насколько я понимаю, там используется среднеизвешенное. Если бы вы рапортовали беду по методу LIFO, сильно бы две эти оценки отличались бы друг от друга? Был ли какой-то импакт в четвертом квартале от падения цены на нефть? Спасибо.
There are a couple of questions, and the first one is about the tax maneuver. Could you please prompt us in terms of the way the refining margin changed in your case compared to last year, in a month in, month out? What has been the dynamic in terms of the effect from the customs duties as well? And the second question is about the methodology that you apply in terms of the reserve evaluation. As far as I understand, it's on the average weighted one. But if you would have applied the LIFO methodology, would it have been any way different from the assessment that you did during the fourth quarter?
Да, Денис Станкевич, я отвечу. Значит, касательно налогового маневра, в первом квартале маржа переработки будет немногим отличаться от нуля. Наверное, будет выше, чем ноль, но, тем не менее, очень низкая. Но я бы не связывал это исключительно и только с налоговым маневром. Здесь на маржу переработки воздействовало сразу несколько обстоятельств. Это связано и с тем, насколько упали цены на нефть, и, соответственно, на нефтепродукты изменились нетбэки. Вторая составляющая – это премии на внутреннем рынке, которые не могли слишком быстро отреагировать на происшедшие в законодательстве изменения. В частности, в первые месяцы у нас та самая премия российского рынка, которую мы наблюдали, но в особенности на бензин, но и на дизельное топливо, обычно ушла полностью, а если говорить про дизельное топливо, то на российском рынке был большой дисконт на дизельное топливо. Эта ситуация ненормальная с точки зрения рыночной практики, и, конечно же, со временем, и мы уже сейчас это видим, все это выравнивается и придет к нормальным значениям. И вообще, на мой взгляд, оценку влияния налогового маневра на финансовые результаты нефтепереработки можно будет дать гораздо позднее, когда пройдет не просто несколько месяцев, а несколько сезонов, поскольку очень сезонно распределена маржа нефтепереработки по году, и, наверное, этот разговор правильно провести там не раньше сентября-октября месяца. То, что касается второго вопроса оценки запасов, ну, можно уточнить, вы запасы имели в виду запасы нефтяные или ТМЦ, с точки зрения?
Ну, я имею в виду нефть, нефтепродукты, то есть это большой фактор или нет? Вот, насколько я понимаю, у переработчиков Европы там сильно меняется.
Все, спасибо. Значит, понятно, нет, для нас в данном случае использование обоих методов нейтрально, то есть не сильно бы повлияло, если бы мы использовались другими.
And Denis Stankiewicz would be answering this question. So as far as the tax maneuver is concerned, one should state that during first quarter the refining margin wouldn't look very much different from zero. I guess it's going to be a little bit higher than zero, but nevertheless it will be a low one. But I wouldn't relate that exclusively to the tax maneuver. because the refining margin here was affected by several circumstances simultaneously. On the one hand, the extent to which the oil prices declined, as well as the netbacks changing for the refined products. And the second component was the premium in the domestic market, which couldn't respond quickly enough to the changes taking place in the legislation. And specifically during the first few months, we saw that the very same Russian premium that we have been observing, particularly in the case of gasoline and the diesel fuel, usually it has gone down completely. Speaking about the diesel fuel specifically, the Russian market showed a very big discount for the diesel fuel. That was a very abnormal situation in terms of the market practices, and certainly in due time, and we're currently seeing it already, it is all balancing itself out, rebounding to normal indicators. So generally speaking, in my mind, an ability to assess the effect of the tax manoeuvre over the financial results of refining should be made slightly later, not in a few months' time, but in a few seasons' time, because the refining margin is spread out very seasonally throughout the whole year. So I believe that it would be more appropriate to have this conversation not earlier than September, October. But in as far as the second part of your question concerned, which was about the reserve estimation, I would say that we are using these two methodologies you refer to, and we do not identify any major difference between the two.
Your next question comes from the line of Sofia Kirsimova. Please ask your question.
Hello? Could you hear me?
Да, мы вас слышим. Давайте, пожалуйста.
Okay, yeah, I have two questions. First one is about the structure of sales of crude oil. I mean, you changed significantly this year, I mean, last year, the structure of sales, 20% sales on the in the internal market and 80% for the export. Are you going to change this structure this year and the next one? I mean, in terms of tax manure, because tax structure has changed. So, and the second question is about the structure of oil products sales. I mean, are you going to increase the diesel fuel sales? I mean, high value-added products in your production sales, I mean. So, I have two questions.
Спасибо. Денис Танкевич, отвечу на оба вопроса. Значит, относительно структуры продаж нефти, ну, объяснение следующее. Прежде всего, это связано с тем, что мы приобрели Бурнефтегаз и выбирали лучшее направление для реализации нефти в Бурнефтегазе. Там реализация шла на внутренний рынок. Внутренний рынок имел в данном случае премию к экспортному нетбэку, и поэтому мы выбирали ровно эти пути реализации по Бурнефтегазу. Если говорить про нашу реализацию на других месторождениях, то структура по большому счету не менялась. По месторождениям на Башкирии мы также продавали примерно 30-40% на экспорт, остальное шло на собственные заводы, соответственно, там была уже реализация нефтепродуктов. То, что касается Башнефполюса, там также мы работаем и реализуем нефть в соответствии с лицензионными условиями, и часть из этой реализации идет на внутренний рынок в соответствии с условиями. То есть, если вот разложить эту реализацию между активами, то то же самое, что было на башкирских месторождениях, новое месторождение Бурнефтегаз и изменения в связи просто с ростом добычи, реализации на Башнефть-полюсе в соответствии с лицензионными соглашениями. По второму вопросу, структура продаж по дизельному топливу, что выросли объем продаж дизельного топлива, ну, здесь связано просто, да, действительно, с изменившейся выработкой. Особенно это касается, по-видимому, четвертого квартала, когда мы запустили установку по производству водорода, и вы видели, что у нас вырос объем производства светлых, поскольку мы сумели загрузить наши мощности по крекингам. Это привело к увеличению выхода светлых и, в частности, дизельного топлива, которое мы смогли реализовать больше. Ну и в четвертом квартале, в принципе, мы понижали остатки и было больше продаж, чем производства.
So,
answering both of these questions, with respect to the sales structure for oil, I will give you the following explanation. First and foremost, it was because we acquired Burneftgaz and we were trying to choose the best destination for the sale from Burneftgaz, which was domestically driven, whereby the domestic market in this particular case offered a premium to the export netbacks, and so we decided to go that particular way to sell the product from Burneftgaz. Now, speaking about our sales from other fields, the structure, largely speaking, has not changed. In as far as the Bashkirian fields are concerned, we similarly were selling approximately 30-40% for exports, while the remainder was directed to our refineries, subsequently from which it was the sale of refined product. As far as the Bashneft Polyus is concerned, similarly, we are selling crude in compliance with the license requirements, and so some share of that sale goes into the domestic market under the respective conditions. So if you allocate this sale in between our assets, then you would see the same thing as was the case with respect to the Bashkirian fields. The new field, such as Burneftgaz, is in the picture now, and certain changes simply because of the growing production and sale out of Bashneft Polyus because of the license agreement requirements. Now, as to the second question, with respect to the changing structure of the diesel fuel sale, that the volume has grown. Simply put, it's because of a changing output, and particularly that applies to Q4, I would assume, when we launched our hydrogen unit, and you noted that the lighter products volumes in the output grew because we were able to load up our capacities in cracking, which led to a greater volumes of the lighter fuels, lighter products, and the diesel fuel which we were selling. And so during fourth quarter, we were trying to reduce our balances and were able to show more of a sale than the production.
Вы что-то еще уточнить хотели, да, мне показалось?
Да, да, спасибо.
Пожалуйста.
Я хотела уточнить именно по структуре продаж нефтепродуктов в целом на следующий год, если это возможно. Потому что до этого вы упоминали, что планируете к 2017 году практически полностью прекратить выпуск мазута, да, темных нефтепродуктов, в счет, то есть в пользу светлых нефтепродуктов. Вот насколько эти цели достижимы, учитывая, что капексы на цели переработки вы не наращиваете. Достаточно ли вам капексы для того, чтобы это сделать?
The additional question about the overall structure of sales for the refined product for the next year and for the forthcoming period, because previously you mentioned that by 2017 you are planning to practically stop producing the fuel oil and the darker products, all in favor of lighter products. So in this relationship, you know, bearing in mind that you are not going to grow capital expenditure for refining.
Значит, как уже Александр Леонидович упоминал, у нас стратегически ничего не поменялось. Наши вложения в нефтепереработку имеют ровно те же цели, а именно уменьшение темных нефтепродуктов. Но здесь два момента. К этой цели можно идти двумя путями параллельно, не исключая ни один из них. Первое, это то, что мы делаем уже сейчас, мы частично понижаем объем переработки, и это позволяет нам вырабатывать больше светлых нефтепродуктов. И уже сейчас мы работаем на очень маленьком объеме непереработанного вакуумного газойля. Это результат как запуска установки по производству водорода и до загрузки мощностей по крекингам, так и более низкого объема переработки. Что касается утилизации мазута, то мы реализуем проект по строительству еще одной, уже третьей для нас установки замедленного коксования. Она будет готова к вводу в эксплуатацию в 2018 году, и, соответственно, с 2019 года мы сможем работать на безмазутовой технологии полностью.
As has been previously mentioned by Mr. Korsik, our strategy hasn't changed. Our investments into refining pursue the very same goals, which is to reduce the amount of dark product output. But there are two points to be mentioned, because one can achieve these goals two ways in parallel. The first thing is what we're already doing now. We're partially reducing the amount of refining, which enables us to produce more of the lighter products. And already now, we operate within a very small amount of unrefined gas oil, which is both the result of us launching the hydrogen unit and additional loading of cracking capacities, as well as a lower level of refining. Now, in as far as the utilization of fuel oil is concerned, we are currently running the project of building yet additional, the third delayed coking unit, which will be ready to be commissioned into operation in 2018. And so, respectively, as of 2019, we'll be able to work based on a completely fuel oil-free technology.
Спасибо большое за ваши ответы.
Your next question comes to the line of Olga Danilenko. Please ask your question.
Добрый вечер. Спасибо за презентацию. У меня к вам два вопроса. Первый. Денис ранее отметил, что в четвертом квартале были созданы резервы под обесценение финансовых активов. Не могли бы вы уточнить, созданные резервы, они покрывают всю сумму этих финансовых активов? Как вы оцениваете вероятность разворота этих провизий в случае, может быть, изменения макроусловий? Может быть, есть риск дополнительных начислений? Вот любые комментарии было бы очень полезно. И второй вопрос, связанный с ценами на нефтепродукты. Чувствуете ли вы какое-то давление, может, рекомендации по сдерживанию роста цен на нефтепродукты на внутреннем рынке? Может быть, прокомментируйте, когда вы ожидаете, цены на нефтепродукты могут вернуться до уровня, обеспечивающего равную доходность с экспортными направлениями? Спасибо.
A couple of questions this time. The first one is that Denis Sienkiewicz previously mentioned that in fourth quarter the impairment was created for the loss of the value of the financial assets. What is the overall figure that covers this particular value, and what is the probability of any additional effect in change the macro conditions change? So any kind of a comment or explanation would be very welcome. Now, the second question is about the prices for the refined product. Do you feel any pressure or any guidance that you can give us in terms of the any factors which would deter further growth of the refined product prices? When do you expect that the refined product prices may rebound back to the level which provides the equal parity in terms of the profitability, in terms of domestic sales and exports?
Ну, я отвечу на первый вопрос. Значит, резервы под финансовые активы. Мы начислили резервы на все активы, которые считаем проблемными. Причем начислили на 100% сумму этих активов. Это на самом деле не означает, что мы считаем эти активы полностью потерянными, и компания сейчас работает на тем, чтобы обеспечить их возврат. Просто, к сожалению, вот на момент подготовки отчетности мы не можем дать какую-либо иную оценку, сколько из этих активов удастся вернуть на баланс компании, а что сделать не удастся. Поэтому мы подошли к этому, назовем так, консервативно, и начислили 100% резервы вот на те активы, которые считаем проблемными, и срок оплаты по которым просрочен.
Denis Tankevich would answer the first question. So as far as the impairment of for the financial assets are concerned, we have accrued this kind of an impairment for all of the assets we believe to be problematic or stressed, and we did it in 100% kind of an approach, which essentially doesn't mean that we view them as completely lost for the company. We are currently doing certain work in order to bring them back. It's just that, unfortunately, by the point in time when the reporting was being prepared, we were not in a position to give you any other kind of an assessment in terms of how many of these assets it would be possible to bring back into the books of the company and which of them are going to stay out. So we approached it in a conservative way, I should say, accruing 100% impairment for the assets which we believe to be stressed or problematic, and the payment for which has been overdue.
Ольга, насколько я понял, ваш второй вопрос сводился к тому, не говорит ли нам правительство не повышать цены на нефтепродукты. Если это, если я правильно понял ваш вопрос, то ответ нет, не говорит. К большому счастью. Правительство заинтересовано прежде всего в розничных ценах. Это самый главный фактор. Оптовые цены не столь важны для государства. Розничные цены, вы наверняка заметили, находятся более-менее на том же самом уровне, на котором они были, и определяются исключительно спросом и предложением. Поэтому правительство российское относится к этому совершенно спокойно. И нет никаких причин думать о том, что будут работать другие факторы, кроме спроса и предложения. Сейчас спрос низкий, поэтому цены относительно низкие. Летом, конечно, они должны будут вырасти на какую-то величину, потому что спрос повысится, но это обычное явление, это обычные сезонные колебания. А если говорить об оптовых ценах, если взять дизель, то, несмотря на то, что был некий провал во внутренних ценах на дизель в начале года, как сказал Денис, сейчас все возвращается в норму, и, как обычно, в связи с тем, что дизель профицит на российском рынке, цена будет соответствовать ровно экспортному паритету, и это в наших планах. Если же говорить о бензине, то вы тоже знаете, что у бензина всегда обычно есть некая премия на внутреннем рынке, это касается оптовых цен, и эта премия до какого-то уровня восстанавливается и восстановится. Я не думаю, что этот год, если не говорить об абсолютных цифрах, будет чем-то отличаться от предыдущих годов. Дизель будет продаваться по экспортному паритету, цены на заправках будут определяться спросом и предложением, а оптовые цены на бензин, естественно, будут колебаться каким-то образом, но на конечного потребителя это не оказывает никакого влияния. Здесь вопрос о том, кто зарабатывает деньги на оптовых продажах, то ли нефтяные компании, то ли трейдеры, которые торгуют между нефтяными компаниями и владельцами бензоколонок.
Olga, if I understood your question correctly, it was about whether the government is telling us not to raise the prices for our refined product. So if this is the correct way to hear it, then the answer is negative. It is not telling us anything like that, happily enough. The government is more interested in the retail prices, and this is the biggest factor, because the wholesale prices are not being viewed as important by the government. While the retail prices, as you have definitely noted, are staying at almost the same level as they have been, and are being defined exclusively by the demand and supply factors. So the Russian government is quite relaxed about it, and there are no reasons to think that there will be any other factors playing into it apart from the supply and demand. The demand is low, so the prices are low. During the summer, they will definitely grow by a certain margin because the demand will be growing, but this is a usual sort of thing, seasonal changes. Now, speaking about the wholesale prices, and specifically the diesel fuel, despite there being a certain dip in the domestic diesel prices, like Dennis mentioned, happily enough, everything is recovering, and as is usual, because there is a surplus of diesel in the Russian market, the price will correspond exactly to the export parity, and that is part of our plans. Now, speaking about gasoline, you should also know that usually there is a bit of a premium for gasoline in the domestic market, which applies to the wholesale prices, and this particular premium is recovering up to a certain level, and it will recover. So I do not think that this year, if we are not talking about in absolute figures, will be any way different from the previous years. The diesel will be sold at export parity prices, while the prices at the gas station will be defined by supply and demand, while wholesale prices for gasoline will be fluctuating in a certain way, but that won't create any effect over the end user. Now, the whole whole question is about who's making money from wholesale, either the oil companies or the traders, who are trading in between the oil companies and the gasoline station owners.
Your next question comes to the line of Andrei Gromadin. Please ask your question.
Yes, hello. I have a couple of questions. First one on your impairment charge related to Bonitgaz. So basically, could you clarify what's changed in Tatarstanskaya project, and has Bonitgaz production targets changed, and what level of production do you expect from this asset in 2020, if you can indicate? And second, just a follow-up, short one. You mentioned only delayed coca construction by 2018. Could you confirm that both delayed coca and hydrocracker are still in your pipeline? And have you started actually delayed coca construction, or it's delayed? Thank you.
Andrei, this is Alexander Korsik about Tatarstanskaya field. When we were purchasing, can you hear me? Sorry, Andrei, this is Alexander Korsik. As to Tatarstanskaya field, when we were purchasing Burneftegaz, we made valuation of two major assets of Burneftegaz, its Sorovskaya field and Tatarstanskaya field. And we put a value to Tatarstanskaya field of zero in our valuation. The whole value of Burneftegaz comes from Sorovskaya field. Why we, in our valuation, decided that it should be zero? It's exploration field with unclear results of exploration. When we have written off, I don't know if I'm using proper terms, this field from our accounts, it does mean that we stop working over there. We continue our exploration programs, and if the program is successful, and there are reasons to believe that it could be successful, it will come back. As to delayed coca and hydrocracker, it's only delayed coca. We do not have hydrocracker in place. It will be enough to build delayed coca and to make certain improvements to existing units in the refineries. If we do that, we'll be able to almost eliminate production of vacuum gas oil and fuel oil by 2019.
Just a small follow-up to follow up. What kind of refining throughput would you expect in 2019 with no heavy product output for refineries? Thank you.
We're looking at a range of 18 to 21, depending on economic conditions.
Thank you.
Your next question comes to the line of Sergei Bigarev. Please ask your question.
Добрый день, Сергей Пигарев, Raymond Gore Securities. Прежде всего, наверное, выражу общее мнение, что мы все очень рады, что старое, эффективное и приятное общение команды остается в роли компании. И несколько вопросов. Вот можете уточнить по объему покупки нефти, нефтепродуктов в 2015 году. Может быть, у вас есть какое-то мнение на этот счет в связи с там налоговым маневром и так далее. И тоже в связи с налоговым маневром изменится ли в 2015 году доли поставок на экспорт и на внутренний рынок? Вот, по вашему мнению. Спасибо.
Thank you very much. This is the Raymond Gore Securities. First of all, I'd like to express the general view that we're all quite happy that the old, effective, and very pleasant to communicate with team stays in the company. And so a couple of questions from me. Could you please specify the volumes of the acquisition of oil and refined products in 2015? Will that be changing in any way because of the tax maneuver, and also because of the tax maneuver as far as 2015 is concerned, will the proportion of what is being exported and sold domestically be changing in any way?
Так, Сергей Денисов-Танкевич, мы тоже очень рады вас слушать и надеемся, что вы и дальше будете участвовать в этих конференциях. Как изменится распределение относительно из-за налогового маневра? Но, смотрите, здесь нет прямой зависимости между тем, какие действуют налоги и что мы оставляем на внутреннем рынке. Это решение, которое мы принимаем как арбитраж фактически каждый месяц при распределении той корзины и сложившихся условиях по ценам на нефтепродукты. Мы не ожидаем, что в этом смысле условия как-то поменяются. Единственное, что поменяется, это, конечно же, структура того, что мы вырабатываем. Поменяется она по нескольким причинам. Я уже их называл. Первое – это снижение объема нефтепереработки, поскольку на сегодняшний день в сегодняшних макроэкономических условиях, и в том числе благодаря налоговому маневру, уровень нашей оптимальной переработки находится примерно на 10% ниже, чем это было раньше. И второе – это то, что те модернизации, которые мы проводим и уже провели, благодаря которым растет загрузка наших вторичных мощностей, мы имеем больше индекс Нельсона, и это позволяет нам вырабатывать лучшую корзину нефтепродуктов с точки зрения соотношения темных и светлых нефтепродуктов. Дальше, после того, как мы этот продукт выработали, всегда арбитраж. Либо это внутренний рынок, либо это экспорт, в зависимости от маржинальности каждого канала в каждый момент. Традиционно всегда лучше продавать бензин на внутреннем рынке, ну, за исключением Средней Азии, где цены примерно равны внутреннему рынку. А вот остальной продукт, ну, вот из базовых продуктов, это всегда арбитраж в каждый момент времени.
Thank you very much, Sergey. We're also very happy to see you, and we hope that you are going to be part of our teleconferencing in the future. Now, answering your question specifically in terms of how the distribution may change with respect to the tax maneuver and because of the tax maneuver, well, I should say that there is no direct dependence in between what kind of taxation is in effect and what we keep in the domestic market. This is the kind of a decision which we make in the mode of an arbitrage in terms of the redistributing the basket every month based upon the current refined product pricing environment. And we do not expect that in this sense these conditions might alter in any way. The only thing which may change is certainly the structure of what we produce, and it might get changed because of several considerations. I've mentioned them previously. First is the reduction of the refined volumes, because under the current macroeconomics, and amongst other things, thanks to the tax maneuver, the level of our optimal refining is approximately by 10% lower than what it used to be in the past, while the second consideration is the kind of modernization that we have done and continue doing, thanks to which the throughput through our secondary capacities is growing, and we're showing a better Nelson index, which enables us to produce a better refined product basket in terms of the ratio between the darker and lighter products. And after we produce a refined product, there is always an arbitrage. Either it's into the domestic market or for exports, depending upon the profit margin within every particular channel at every point in time. Traditionally, it is always good to sell gasoline into the domestic market, with the exception of the Middle Asia, where prices are approximately equal to the domestic market, while the rest of the product out of the basic set, it's always an arbitrage at any given point in time.
Your next question comes from the line of Max Moshkov. Please ask your question.
Не хотелось бы узурпировать время, но вот вопрос, я считаю, очень важный касательно налогового эксперимента, так называемый налог на финансовый результат. Я вот с интересом с вашим интервью ознакомился, Александр, вот в газете «Ведомости», которую вы недавно дали, и понял такую вещь, что компании «Башнефть» этот налоговый результат, ну, этот новый налоговый режим был бы вряд ли выгоден в связи с тем, что компания и так получает достаточно существенную льготу по выработанности месторождений. Вот как вы думаете, все-таки если этот эксперимент будет признан удачным, и этот новый налоговый режим будет после завершения налогового маневра внедрен, значит, в России. Как вы думаете, вот льгота по выработанности месторождений, она останется или все месторождения, браунфилды и новые, будут действовать исключительно в новом налоговом режиме? Спасибо.
I have a question with respect to the tax experiment, or rather the new tax for the financial gain. I read Mr. Korsik's interview in the newspaper recently, and I realized that Bashneft, in as far as this particular tax result is concerned, might not be very beneficial because the company is enjoying a substantial tax benefit in terms of the depletion rate of the fields that it works on. And so what do you think? If this particular experiment is deemed to be successful and this new tax regime, I mean, after the tax manure will be fully sort of brought into effect, this depletion benefit for the fields, will it remain, or all of the fields, the brown fields as well as the green fields, will be subjected to the new tax regime?
Максим, спасибо большое, что вы прочитали мое интервью. Я хотел бы сказать, что я как и был, так и остаюсь сторонником налога на финансовый результат. Но это должна быть, на мой взгляд, универсальная система, которая без всяких исключений, безо всяких льгот применяется ко всем месторождениям в стране. Только в таком случае можно понять, что эффективно, что неэффективно, и какая компания эффективна, какая неэффективна. В этом случае рынок все расставляет по своим местам. Я не хочу загадывать, что будет в том случае, если эксперимент будет удачным или неудачным. Я думаю, что после этого начнутся серьезные обсуждения. И если будут спрашивать мое мнение, я буду говорить, что я за универсальную систему, одинаковую для всех. Если же говорить об эксперименте, то те конкретные условия, которые были предложены, для Башнефти не выгодны. Ну и именно по этой простой причине мы не участвуем в этом эксперименте. Ну а дальше жизнь покажет. Я очень надеюсь, что эксперимент будет удачным, но вне всякого сомнения, после этого будут длительные обсуждения, разные компании будут тем или иным способом отстаивать свои интересы, и я очень надеюсь на мудрость государств, которое в результате примет универсальную систему налогообложения финансового результата. Спасибо.
Максим, thank you very much for reading my interview, and I would like to say that as far as I'm concerned, I have, has been, and I will remain the champion of the financial gains tax. But I believe that this should be a universal system which, without any benefits, without any exemptions, would be applied to all of the fields in the country. Only in this case you can understand what's effective and what is not, which company is operating effectively and which is not. In this case, the market will put everything into the right place. I do not want to guess in terms of what will happen in the future, whether the experiment will be successful or not successful, because I believe that this would provoke some serious and lengthy debate. And if anybody asks my opinion, I would say that I am for the universal system, creating equal rules of the game for everyone. Now, speaking about the experiment, the kind of conditions which were proposed do not offer any benefits to Bashneft, and that was the only reason as to why we were not participating in this experiment. But life will show what's good and what's not. I do hope that the experiment turns out to be successful. Without any doubt, there will be a lengthy discussion after that. Different companies in different ways will be trying to protect their interests, and I hope very much for the wisdom of the government, which eventually would adopt a universal system for the taxation of financial gains. Thank you.
There are no further questions at this time. Please continue.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much once again. It was a great pleasure to talk to you, and thank you very much for your appreciation of the activities of the company. And see you soon. We'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
That does conclude our conference for today. Thank you for participating. You may all disconnect.